I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Fonsi Police was a fixture on the streets of this town from the mid-1930s through to the late 1970s. I hadn't been born yet when he retired in 1979, but he's one of those wonderful people whose life's work not only chronicled this city and its times, but also a lot of people in the process. He'd stand on a street corner in downtown Vancouver and with his camera, snap photos of passerby. You'd get a ticket and call on him the next day, look at the proofs and see which ones you wanted. You'd pay for it, and it would be available later on for pickup or sent to you. This was all in the day when owning a camera was rare, and certainly before cell phones. Even now, how many of us have photos printed? Police took some 15 million photos and was known as the Karsh of Concrete. A new documentary that airs on the Knowledge Network on BC Day, Monday the 5th of August, 2013, looks at the life and work of Fonsi Police. Its producer and director, Melanie Wood, joins me now to preview the film, Fonsi's Corner, and talk about this remarkable life. Ms. Wood is an acclaimed and prolific filmmaker who's made many documentaries for various networks, including the award-winning School of Secrets, which aired on CBC News World. There's also an exhibit on Fonsi Police at the Museum of Vancouver that runs until January. Visit the great website at fonsiescorner.knowledge.ca. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program in studio today, Melanie Wood. Ms. Wood, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good.
Thanks for coming in to do this. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my pleasure.
School of Secrets, that's the, I forget the guy's name now. That I remember seeing that. I thought it was really good. That's the teacher that was having sex with the students, right?
Yeah. And because you've asked me, I've just completely blanked on his name. I can see his face.
It was Tom something.
Tom Ellison.
Ellison, that's
yeah,
it. Yeah,
Tom Ellison.
Yeah,
that's right.
That was a great movie. I remember seeing that one night on News World. And I guess you had trouble getting people to talk to you.
Well, the thing is, there were so many women that could have claimed to have had sexual relationships with Tom Ellison.
Yeah.
And I could talk to a lot of them, but not very many of them wanted to go on camera.
On camera,
you know?
Yeah.
So we ended up with quite a few in the documentary. I was surprised at how many trusted their story to the film.
Yeah, and so how many people for this movie on Fonsi Police have you got? Have you talked to for that we'll see on BC Day?
What you'll see in the film on Fonsi Police, Fonsi's photos, is family. That's all.
His family?
His family.
I see.
His family. So I made a decision. I mean, it's a half-hour film, and what intrigued me first about the project was the photographs themselves, because, like you, I had never met Fonsi.
Yeah.
Anyone who's met him says it's the most unbelievable experience. He was a fantastic person. I never had that pleasure. So it was really the photos that drew me to the project and the story. And then as I started looking at the photos, I realized that there was a lot about that man's personality that allowed him to accomplish what he accomplished without really knowing what he was accomplishing at the time.
Yeah.
And that's when I started to try and bring in family members to talk about who he was and what kind of a man he was.
Yeah, you see pictures of the guy.
Mm-hmm.
He looks charismatic. I mean, I know it's a picture, but you can tell when someone has that sort of spark. And I guess you need that when you're trying to get people to appear similarly in a photo.
Yeah.
And that's what he did. He'd walk down the street, he'd smile at you, snap the picture, and usually people in the photographs are smiling as well, right?
Yeah. Well, and as someone pointed out, anyone can snap the picture. It's getting the person to buy it.
Yeah, that's right.
It was his job. It wasn't, you know. And so he needed to make money, and he had to get them to buy the photos. So it was partly his personality that encouraged people to take the time to do that.
And so he was on a number of corners through the number of years that he was there from. He was there from the 30s to the late 70s.
To the end of the 70s, 1979, he retired, and he did move corners. At the museum, they have a very good description of where he was at what times. We kind of ignore that in the film and call, even the website's called Fonsi's Corner. It's essentially any corner he was standing on as Fonsi's Corner. And it did move around depending on the flow of traffic and the stores. And I'm sure in the beginning of his career, there was some jostling for a good spot as well. But toward the end, he could have his pick of corners. He was the only one left standing.
Yeah, and so in the mid-30s, because it was 1934 was when he started in this business. I read somewhere, I think on your website, that there were something like 8 different, eight other street photographers at the time?
Yeah, there's some confusion around numbers between six and eight companies in the downtown Vancouver core. Apparently they were in lots of cities as well, but eight here, and gradually he just started, as they folded, he would buy them out, buy their cameras, buy the business, and continue.
And so the camera that you'll see at the museum, I haven't been to the exhibit yet, but I've seen you on television talking about it and the articles. The camera itself was bought from, say, a rival photographer that had gone into some other work.
Or, that was one of his. He had many cameras, but the one that we all think of as his camera, that robot that's at the museum, he bought from someone else. Yes, exactly.
And my understanding is that he shot on film. Like
35 millimeter
movie film, and what's the difference between, because I don't know anything about movies and you do, shooting on, say, movie film as opposed to, say, camera film for photographs?
Well, it's just a different size for starters, and they come in big reels, so he would take that and the whole reel, you know, we'd cut sections of it and it would wind through his camera, but because he was doing stills, he could actually take a movie frame, which is wide cinematic, and break it in half and do two portrait shots in each movie frame,
And how much were these pictures, if you wanted to buy one, say?
Over the years. I mean, I think at one point I saw there's a ticket that says $8 for $1, and I'm sure it increased as the years went on. I know sometimes they were 25 cents each, and maybe toward the end it was $1. I don't know. We don't have all his tickets, so I'm not sure. But it never went more than that.
Yeah. And I was just wondering, so he'd be on the street 8 hours a day, more?
Long. I mean, again, depending on the year and the decade, he'd be out there in the daytime on nice days especially. He'd go home. But then in the nice evenings, he'd come back and do the night crowd, because that's, a lot of people were out at theaters and movies and dressed out and going dancing. And he did a lot of business that way as well. So he worked very hard. And then he and his wife, Anne, had to process all the film and print all the pictures. So I'm sure it was endless work.
And so I guess somebody would be at the shop. If you came in with your ticket, you could look at the proof. And
his wife, often.
Really?
Anne,
And so he died 10 years ago, is that right?
2002?
Yeah.
January?
He was in his 80s, right? Mm-hmm. Late 80s. And then his wife died very recently. She was in her 90s.
A few years ago. Yeah. That's right.
Did you get to talk to her?
No. I came into this project after they had both passed on, so I haven't talked to either of them.
Yeah. Who's Megan Carville Davis?
Megan is a colleague of mine, lovely woman, who had wanted to make a documentary, a profile biography of Fonsi, and had been working with him and Anne, but hadn't actually done any recording on tape or film when he died. So that was a big setback. And over the years, she's wanted to continue the project, but never really found a way to do that. So she asked me if I'd be interested in taking it on, and that's how I came to the project.
On your website, there's a photograph of her taken by Fonsi, right?
Yeah. She started by finding, in when her dad died, finding a box of Fonsi photographs of him. And then she also has had them over a decade. I think there's seven or eight of hers. They're on display at the museum and in one of our shorts that we made.
In one of the things on the website that people can do is they can upload photos of themselves, or guess, or anybody else that were taken by Fonsi. Have you gotten a lot of those?
We're up to 2,500 photos
now.
Yeah, and the website just went public at the beginning of March. So there's been a lot of action. A lot of people have these, and word starts to spread. And I always know when someone else has done something about it, because there'll be a whole other batch of photos coming in
from friends
to put up, and some really good stories coming in too. It's not just about the photos. If you click on them, you can actually see the stories if they've written them. And some people just write, "That's my aunt and uncle, and I love them," which is great. But some people actually write something, some memory that comes with that photograph, and some of the stories are fantastic.
So he had two children, is that right?
He had two children, Diane and Tony.
And you've talked to them?
I've spoken with both of them. Tony is in the film. Diane, unfortunately, couldn't make it down. She lives in Kelowna.
I see. Do you get any insight from them as to what motivated him? I guess he didn't know that what he was doing at the time would be as valuable as it is now, sort of a historical document. I mean, it's a great cultural sort of capsule, if you will. He was just interested in making money?
You know what? It was, well, just interested in making money, he probably would have gone into the restaurant business. Yeah. So there was something about it that he liked. He was a very social person, and his family definitely supports that notion. He loved people. He loved being around people. He was interested in people. So, you know, in my world, he could have been a really good documentary filmmaker because he truly cared what other people thought, anyone on the street. So that helped him create what we think of as his legacy. At the time, it was just his the way he made a living.
Yeah.
He was happy doing it. He was happy to take the pictures. Also was very happy to retire. I mean, there was no sense to him that he wanted to keep doing that after retirement at all.
Yeah.
It was a job.
Did he take photographs like at parties or family functions?
Not so much.
No, really?
No.
Yeah.
I mean, he did a little bit, but no more than anyone else did. There was,
There's a short clip on your website of a film of him, sort of him, so someone driving up in a car, and do you know what corner that is?
I don't. I think it's outside the bay, is my guess, on Georgia Street, or it might be on Granville outside the Commodore. Both of those are locations that he could have been at. In fact, I think it was Granville Street.
Yeah.
That comes from an old film called Taxi or something like that from the 1960s CBC made, and he just happened to be in it. The taxi actually drives, it's a device they use to drive all through the city and show off the city of Vancouver, and Fonzie was one of them.
I mean, and then you see him chatting with a guy and he's got this great big grin on his face and he's very personable.
And the
family life and the sort, I mean, was it much the same?
Yeah, he was always the life of a party.
Yeah.
He loved, like I say, loved being around people.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, this big, larger-than-life personality. I haven't met anyone who knows him that hasn't said he was a delight to be around. I mean, I think he is just one of those human beings that everyone wanted to spend time with. So,
was he born here?
He was born here, yes.
Yeah.
His parents are from Italy, but he was born in Vancouver,
and then,
actually in Victoria.
In Victoria, and then he worked and lived here, and then in retirement moved to Kelowna.
Moved to Kelowna in retirement, yes.
Yeah. During the war years, I guess there's a gap there where he wasn't on the street taking pictures.
That's
he served, right?
He served in the war, and that's when his wife, Anne, actually purchased his first camera that he owned. So he went, when he began, he was working for other companies.
Yeah.
And then while he was out overseas, he agreed that she should buy this camera, and when he came back, he started his own business.
Yeah. When you look at the photos, you see a very different sort of Vancouver, but at the same time, having lived here my whole life, it's a Vancouver that's familiar. It's got that sort of Vancouver look. The buildings, I mean, some of them have changed, but you know, you can sort of pick out which corner these are at. When you go through the exhibit at the Museum of Vancouver, it really is a not only a treasure trove, but it's a great, I guess, capture of history, isn't it?
And yeah.
Not only hairstyles and dress, but...
But everything. I mean, that's what his photos did, is they capture, you know, what businesses... You can see the biggest change I find in the physical street is that it used to be a lot of small businesses. You know, there was DeBrute's Chocolate, there was a millinery store, there was, you know, Toronto Menswear. All those individual stores are now gone, and we have, you know, 14 Gaps.
Starbucks.
And before there were a lot of individual businesses, and that's the biggest difference in that. And then, of course, the styles changing through the years are just great to see in terms of clothing.
And he'd shoot all this film, process it for people to look at, and then he was known to get rid of it right away. Is that right?
Yeah, not right away. His tickets say he held it for 8 months.
Yeah.
He usually held it for a year, maybe over a year. But when you imagine what, I forget the number you
15
said.
15 million?
15 million.
Yeah.
And it was just him and his wife most of the time. I mean, he had other workers, but he didn't have a big, you know, business of people working for him. And to try and catalog and keep track of that many negatives would be an impossible job. So at the end of a year, he just chucked them. I mean, it was really a pragmatic decision. It wasn't that he was throwing them away for any other reason. He just couldn't handle it.
Yeah. But I understand at the exhibit there's a cache of films.
Yeah. Two reels from 1969, I believe.
Just sort of like a month of everything that he shot. Where did that come from? Do you know?
That came, I think it was in the camera when he donated the camera, or the reels were stored there. It wasn't that it was still in the camera, but it just came with, when he retired, that was part of what came to the museum. And because of the weird way that he shot on that film, it really isn't until now that there was a way of processing, digitizing it to make it accessible for everybody.
Yeah. In terms of the people who've sent in photos to your website, will we see some of those in the film?
Yes. The film is a really interesting mix of Fonzie's life and career and the photos themselves and the people who were in the photos and some of the people's stories. I've talked to lots. Some of them will be in the film, telling the story of what the picture reminds them of. So, yeah, absolutely.
Did you talk to Murray Goldman?
No, unfortunately. I wanted to, but he was not doing very well when I started this process, and I haven't checked in lately with the family.
Yeah. He died last week or something like that.
Oh, was it just last week?
Yeah, a couple weeks ago. For people that don't know, he's a clothier in the city for many years. And I guess he had some relationship with Fonzie, didn't he?
Yeah, Fonzie's store at one point was in one of the buildings that Murray owned, so Murray was his landlord.
Yeah.
And he met him out on the street, and they had a good relationship. And, in fact, there is an interview that Megan Carvel-Davis did with Murray Goldman back when they were starting the original concept for the film. And so we have Murray Goldman talking about Fonzie, but that isn't in our film.
Do you find that a half an hour isn't enough time for something like this?
Well, you know, it's still pictures. I think half an hour is about perfect, actually.
Really? Yeah.
I think people get the idea. I mean, if I was to do more with the photographs, I would do more shorts. I've made 24 shorts, and each of those 24 takes a group of photos or one family story and just deals with it in a small way. And I think that's a much better format for all the rest of the thousands of stories that are coming into the website.
And so people can view those shorts and the finished movie after the 5th, I guess, of August on the Knowledge website. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. On the Fonzie's Corner website.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of great sort of locally made pictures that are on there on the website that people can look at in the sort.
I think Knowledge has done a really good job of figuring out that people are interested in history and they're interested in local stories. And, they've been very supportive about this whole project, so...
Having spent time looking at Fonzie Police's life and his story, do you have any sense of what he represents? I mean, I know he represents a certain chunk of time in our history in the city. But, I mean, the immigrant story as well is fascinating, the war years. Do you have a sense of what he means to Vancouver?
You know what I do. I think what he means to Vancouver, what he's done, what he's captured, is a real people sense. He was so open to everybody, unlike history written by the rich and famous or the, you know, highly educated. He was on the street, and so what he's done is he's recorded real Vancouver, whoever was here. So whoever came from other places, immigrant stories, rich, poor, young, old, he had no biases. He was interested in everybody. And so for me, that's his real legacy, is that openness, that what he says to me is we are all human beings and we all should be respectful of each other and everyone has a story. That's what he's done.
I can't wait to see the movie. And it must be great fun for you to look at all these photos and to see them up close.
Yeah, it is. It's fascinating. I love when they come in. I love reading what people write about them. I love looking at their families.
Yeah. I understand you're in the midst of editing the movie at the moment, right?
Yeah.
Did you have something planned for the next movie, say?
Well, I'm working on another film already at the same time on search and rescue in Canada, which is an entirely different realm, which I'm having fun doing, a lot of fun doing, actually.
Yeah.
And there, a couple of other projects coming along through Knowledge Network, which I'm looking forward to.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet you. I appreciate you coming in to do this, and we'll look forward to the film on August 5th.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. The Museum of Vancouver, incidentally, has that exhibit, Fonsi's Photos, and that'll be an exhibition there until January. The website for more, fonsiescorner.knowledge.ca. The film, Fonsi's Corner, airs Monday, the 5th of August, 2013, that's BC Day, on Knowledge Network. It's director and producer Melanie Wood. Join me in studio here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plantin.